Welcome back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into 2020.
Yes.
Amazing. Still Happy holidays. Still, Happy New Year.
Still season one is what we're doing around. Still season one.
Season one.
We are at Fadley's. We're Lexington Market. For those of you who checked us out, we're 115 episodes deep into this thing.
Over 100 episodes. Great sponsors.
And that's season one?
Season one.
Well, I was
going to call it, hard,
yeah,
TJ.
I was call it season
hard.
Two. But, you know, honestly, when I dream this whole thing up, and I think so much of this is going to be about running for mayor and who's going to be our mayor, I had no idea our current mayor at the time was going to be going through the challenges that she was. Dom was running Baltimore County about 15 months ago, and I said, you know what? There's going to be an election in April. I would really love to be in a situation to talk to not just the mayoral candidates, but everybody about this and about how we're going to make our city better. Before we even came up, you had fans coming in here. I mean, why don't you spend a little time on television? Yeah. That's a heck of a benefit to a mayoral campaign.
Well, I'm fortunate and I'm blessed, and I don't take any of that stuff for granted. You know, a lot of people know me, and you know, that's a good problem to have, obviously, when you're running a campaign. But just tried to be authentic my whole career.
For those of you listening on the radio, not watching on Facebook, we're with TJ Smith, mayoral candidate. Slogan, think different.
Think different, yes.
Think different.
Yes.
It's 2020.
Right there.
There's the slogan.
That's him, by the way.
You can check it
better
out.
Looking.
What is it?
Yeah,
it's TJ Smith for Baltimore.
Yes, TJ Smith for Baltimore.com. And I, you know, chose the think different. It like came up in brainstorming, and realistically, it's like an action, you know. And I know that the grammatically correct version is think differently, but it's an action. We have to think different about how we're doing things in Baltimore on a global scale, not just as we talk about crime, which is the number one issue, of course, facing Baltimore, but everything. As we are sitting in Lexington Market a year, 2 years from now, this place will be different. And that's a good problem to have as we invest in our public market and make this a better space. This is a gateway to downtown Baltimore, and it should be a tourist destination.
Well, it's a huge
and
food source, as we've learned here, in a food desert to the west of here.
Exactly,
you know?
And it should be something that people in the general area want to come to and get their groceries. So I'm looking forward to that transition as we move forward.
Well, I think for you, background in law enforcement, background in law, our last visit before the holidays was Police Commissioner Michael Harrison, who joined us here. And you know, crime is on everybody's mind.
Right.
I mean, you're sort of, you had a tragedy in your own family. You stood in front of cameras many nights when there were tragedies.
Yeah.
You know, Theroux talked about prosecution. We've had Brandon talking about being robbed and that sort of spurring him on to become, you know, all of these stories that come to, but you come from a police background. Like, I would think you see this in a different way, having worn the badge.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what I've seen over the years are politicians consistently, and what we've done in Baltimore especially, is we've changed police commissioners over and over and over and over again. We look at the results based on this threshold of 300 murders, and that's our threshold of safety. I think that's ridiculous, first of all. One murder, one death is one too many, and we shouldn't be quantifying it in a level of safety. Well, there were 250, so it's safe in Baltimore. No, that's ridiculous. So as we've continuously changed police commissioners, I look at that, and I say the lack of continuity, and you can look at sports, and we talk about sports analogies.
So you're a big Ravens fan.
Big Ravens fan.
So you're going to make, it's a perfect time to be making Ravens analogies,
absolutely,
right?
And if you think about it, John Harbaugh, they wanted to chase him out of town a couple of years ago, and now we have the best record in franchise history. And if you look, it was something on I've watched recently, is the Cleveland Browns. We know how bad they've been since they came back.
They don't have a coach right now as we're coming. They will soon.
But, but since 1999, I think they've had 10 different coaches, and they've been a horrible franchise. Sometimes it's not about the coach of the team. It's about the general manager. It's about who's calling the greater shots, who's understanding that this is more than just the X's and the O's. It's player personnel. It's the culture in the team. And I look at Baltimore, like the culture has to change at the top. And we have to stop looking at this violence epidemic through the lens of policing, because that's what creates over-policing in the communities that have been disproportionately served.
So what is the lens then? If it's not policing, because most people say, get me a cop, you know, give me security, give me cameras, criminals are going to be criminals. I don't subscribe to that because I've been to places where they've halted this through education, at, you know, all of the things that create better human beings, right?
Yeah. Education is a cornerstone to this. If you think about it, a lot of people who make the decision to commit crimes are making bad decisions, and some of them haven't processed decision-making skills. So education is a cornerstone. Now, don't get me wrong. Policing is a major piece of this pie, but economic development, workforce development, and opportunity are a big part of this whole crime epidemic. If you look at where the violence occurs in the city of Baltimore, it really hasn't moved. It's in the same communities it's always been in. And if you go back to those communities from this year, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they look the exact same, if not even worse. And you see the murder numbers increasing in those communities. And we also haven't treated some of the things that go along with this violence, which is trauma. I've talked about trauma endlessly, ad nauseum. I think some of us, we think we can deal with it better than others, and we might deal with it better than others, but young people have been dealing with trauma. If you take a 10-year-old, for instance, when they were five, we started this over 300 thing again. They've seen more than 1,600 murders in the last 5 years of their life in this city, and more than 3,000 shootings over that same time. That's war zone numbers, and we aren't treating these young people, and they're going to school, and we tell them to concentrate. There have been kids, my mom is a teacher, been teaching here for 36 years. My cousin's been teaching here for 15 years. They tell me the stories. My son's mom, been teaching here for 20 years. They tell me the stories of every single year they have a child that loses a parent. Every single year, each one of them has a child whose parent is killed that's in their class. And they basically just go back to class. School just starts again. And the kids are affected by this. This is not a conversation elementary school kids should be having.
We had, it's interesting, TJ, we had Chris Battaglia on, who, he makes your point exactly. He's the principal at Ben Franklin High School here in Baltimore City, doing marvelous things. And Nestor always says, go back into the vault if you're listening. You want to hear somebody making a difference, go listen to Chris Battaglia and listen to what he's doing.
Well, Cherry Hill's unbelievable.
But he gave this example of what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. He said, this terrible thing happened, and he went back to class. Mm-hmm. Chris came from, he had worked at Catonsville High School. Mm-hmm. He had worked at Sparrows Point High School. He had worked at Overly High School. And he said, you have to understand, he said, one day what I was really struck by, and I knew we had a lot of work to do, was there was a car on fire out in front of our school, totally engulfed in flames. And he said, for my kids and my community members, it was just like
another dig.
Oh, there's a car. He said, my thought immediately went that if I was at Catonsville High School when you were the principal and there was a car on fire in the parking lot, it would have been a major moment, not only for Catonsville, and you know, because you've worked in both subdivisions. Mm-hmm. He said it would have been all over social media. People would have been rushing to the school.
It's an event.
It would have been a major event. And he said, for my kids, it was a car on fire.
And that's just one. That's actually, it's just a car on fire with not a human being in it. We're talking about death and destruction, people, kids walking through crime scenes. It's little things, things that I want to change. When I say think differently, I was at a crime scene the other day where the three men were murdered, and there were still gloves on the ground. There was still crime scene tape there. A grown man, sent me a message on Facebook a couple weeks ago. There was a person killed on 25th Street, I believe, late in December. And he sent me this message, just cold. He said, I don't know if you can help, but if you can, I just rode through that intersection, and I've never experienced this in my life, but it's traumatic. It's still blood in the street from Whittiesburg. These little, seemingly little things, it's not a little thing, it's human life. And I spoke about this last year. There was a murder in a community, and I saw the video when I woke up the next day. The fire department was spraying down the street, and someone's blood was racing down the drain. Mm. And I'm looking at this saying, this is not normal. And I went out and knocked on doors in that community, and this wasn't the, quote, voter-rich area, because the human part of me still compels me to do certain things. So I'm in
this
area. Well,
if you're mayor, that's your neighborhood, too.
Exactly. You're right about that.
You get to be the mayor of that neighborhood,
of,
too.
Of okay. Every neighborhood.
Exactly.
And that's the point. I'm glad you made that point, because it's not about where you're going to get votes. But I went out there because I wanted to talk to these people, because this is a traumatic moment that these people have experienced here. And I didn't want to know if any media had come to your door, which they had. I didn't want to know if the detectives had come to see if, you know,
anybody saw anything,
which they had. Did anybody just see if you're doing okay? You just witnessed a man who was killed, and they're washing his blood down the street, and we're going to move on this is a traumatic incident.
Because it's become normal. TJ, and again, we're chatting with TJ Smith, Baltimore City mayoral candidate. If TJ, is that one of the issues that, and you're a city guy, and maybe you talk a little bit about your background and growing up, because I think people want, what we like to do is let people know who these folks are that are running for mayor. But is part of the problem that we have just normalized this violence, that this culture, that it's when Nestor walks around where he lives.
I'll give you an example, and this is a suburban example. All right, I mean, I grew up in Dundalk. I live out in White Marsh. I got many sponsors, Catonsville, wherever. 15 years ago, the notion that I would walk into a place that serves beer and wings, and I don't want to out any place, but any restaurant, even a high end restaurant that serves a $30 piece of fish. In their restaurant, I look up and I see guys in a cage literally beating the hell out of each other on a television screen.
Right,
in the old days, it was professional wrestling. It was all fake, or MMA, it was boxing on a Saturday night, maybe Wide World of Sports. The kids are asleep. I'm talking about like 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm having brunch. And I look up, and I'm seeing tape delay on some Fox channel.
Well, you've had a real
concern. Guys beating each other up on an 80-inch TV, blood going everywhere.
Right.
No concern, and it's just like, hey, pass me the Tabasco and the Sriracha there, and give me some ketchup for the fries. It kind of grosses me out, but I'm thinking this has been normalized, not just with Clint Eastwood movies or Die Hard, which we all watch during the holidays, or you know what violence is, James Bond and all that. This isn't fake violence. This is sanctioned. You know, I know Binky and I know John Rollo and the Shogun. God bless all of them, but I don't think that would have been particularly good for me on Bank Street in 1974 as a six-year-old. I don't know that you would have acted it out or what have you.
So you look at the normalization of this, and I like to use the example of looking at a city like New York or D.C. even, or even L.A., but certainly using New York as an example. Back in the 90s when we had just as many murders, actual human beings being killed as we had last year in Baltimore, there were 2,500 murders in the city of New York, right? 8.5 million people and 2,500 murders. Still outrageous. I bet back then when people were saying they were going to cut that murder rate, and people probably thought they were crazy. We're going to be down to 1,000 murders or whatever it might be. They had about 315 murders last year. They were under 300 the last couple of years. The 315 was actually an increase over the year before. I bet people
fewer
thought they
murders
were, than
TJ,
Baltimore City.
Than Baltimore
and
City.
They, if we had their population,
9 million people.
It would be 4,400 murders in Baltimore.
Wow.
Just to put it on a global scale of how much of an epidemic this is. My point in saying that is we have to rebel against the low expectations that 200 murders is acceptable. Any candidate making a promise to cut murders in half is disrespectful and disrespecting the people of the city, because my brother was 173. If we cut murders in half from last year, my brother still would have been killed. Yeah. We're good with that. We're going to celebrate that. That's absolutely outrageous.
For people who don't know, your brother Dion, 24 years old, I think, shot, killed in 2007. 2017. You had to stand up and talk about it. Talk about that experience as a family member.
The worst experience of my life to have to deal with, and then the secondary, dealing with it publicly, obviously. July 2nd, 2017. I mean, you talk about doing the 2017 of this new millennium age thing. That day I got in crabs. It was the holiday. I was actually off work for a few days. And ironically, I would talk to the homicide commander at the end of each week on Friday, say, I hope I don't talk to you this weekend. And that was our little thing, that I hope I don't talk to you for a while, because we didn't want to talk about murders. That Sunday, I'm I'm actually steamed some crabs. I made a fruit salad. And again, I say the millennium thing. I'm not a millennial, but I posted to Instagram. Here's my fruit salad. Here's my crabs that I steamed.
They're familiar with the crabs. You're Fadley's.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I like to steam my own crabs, so I steamed them. And my mom had asked, you know, I've always steamed her some. So I was taking her some. And I'm pulling back up at home, and I look at my phone. We get alerts of everything happening. And I still can't disconnect, even though I'm off. And I see his name on it. And the odd part about it is it didn't say deceased. It was weird. It just said an event occurred. And I called the commander, and he, you know, sends me a picture. And, yeah, and it started from there. Just, I mean, thrust me into a different environment where I'd always been involved with all the violence that's going on, all the young people being killed. But it's a sad fraternity to have had to join. And it's still, like, when the people don't get the trauma, and don't, when we talk about these numbers, we say 348. There are so many more than 348 victims. Their mothers, their fathers, their children, their significant others. So many people were affected by this. My brother has children. Their children without a father now. They're growing up to not know who their father is at this point in their life. You know, it's this level of trauma we're creating. My nephews are rocket launched into an at-risk category by virtue of somebody else's doing. So I always took it personal, but to understand it on the level that you have to understand it now is totally different. And as we speak about these numbers, the humans connected to those numbers beyond the person that's deceased is super important, and we can't forget that.
Is there anything about your background in crisis management that helped you through that to some degree? Maybe this is part of your crisis management, is running for mayor and saying, I don't want your brother, right, your wife, your loved one murdered.
Well, I used to often say, I would always do it. You could probably find videos of me on Google from when I was at the podium. And I would often, I use the podium as an example. I would say, don't wait until we knock on your door before you get involved in doing something about what we're seeing out here, because too many people are being affected by this. Now, I don't care what training you have, what type of stature you have, when your relative is a victim, it takes everything away. I was at the event on New Year's Day where we're reading the names of all the victims of murder last year. And Daphne Alston of Moms of Murdered Sons and Daughters, the president of that, she's upset, as usual, when you have to do this. And she was speaking about trauma. And when I went up and spoke, and I spoke to the fact that we need to take care of ourselves because we shoulder a lot of this, right? And we're not superhuman. And during my brother's murderer's trial, you know, I'm the stoic one in the family, trying to hold everybody together, of course. And a victim witness advocate said to me, you're not Superman. And at that moment, I broke down crying. It was like the moment I needed. It was like, yes. And it was 2 weeks before his funeral and, you know, between the day he got killed and his funeral, July 2nd. And I believe the funeral might have been July 17th or 15th, somewhere around there. That Saturday, 2 weeks afterwards. And that Sunday, I remember laying in the bed all day. And, you know, it was like the moment, because it was just a rough 2 weeks to have to deal with everything, planning a funeral, being involved in that process, all the different things.
This has happened to 348 people in the last year in the city alone.
Oh, you have to deal with your parents at that point.
My dad, you know, and all he had to, just you know, an extended family. It was a lot to deal with, and you know, and then there are people who don't realize it's like real life.
Well,
like,
then there's the back end of the trial part of it. The trauma of what you went through in July. Then there's
the
who's
charges.
Responsible for this, and knowing. And I saw the numbers last week, and Commissioner,
31%.
31%. I mean, there's a 69% chance someone could come in and murder my wife, and we would never figure out who it is. How's that possible?
Right, and that's tough. And I didn't fortunately have to experience that level of not having closure, which I couldn't fathom not knowing who the person was. My cousin was killed in 2003 here in the city, and I'll never forget that, and not knowing who did it.
I saw a billboard right where the farmer's market is, the young lady that was murdered in 1996.
Jenny.
Yes.
Yes, she has a twin sister, yes.
Billboard up, giant plaza somewhere in Northern Parkway.
Yes, York Road. Yep.
This is 1996, 23 years later. We're still putting billboards up because her family hadn't been able to sleep for 23 years.
I've met with her multiple times. And I tell her, like I tell every other family, don't give up. And one of the things that we have a luxury of now with social media, you can be your own cheerleader. You can do your own media for your loved one. I started a show on another station when I got to Baltimore, and my media relations team, we put this show together to keep open homicide cases alive. And every week we called it BPD Case Files. We profiled a different case. And I've befriended so many of the loved ones of the victims. I met Victoria Swift's mom. Victoria Swift was killed in 2017 as well. A young college student, not involved in anything. I believe it ended up being like a robbery gone bad. I hate the robbery gone bad. I mean, what's a good robbery? But it went worse.
There are no good robberies involving me or my wife.
Exactly. So he was killed, but I had spoken to his mom on the phone, and we had her on the show, and I actually met her on January 1st while we were reading the names. And again, it's like this bittersweet moment because it's nothing but tears because we know the connection that there is, but it's a big deal.
Before we take a break, and again, if you're listening, we're with T.J. Smith, mayoral candidate in Baltimore City. T.J., I've heard folks were read about folks whose family members have been victims of violence. And I'm curious about your reaction because very often they will say that they were hoping that the trial and the conviction would bring some peace and closure. And the reality was, as they walk out of the courtroom, it really didn't because they still don't have their loved one.
Right.
What's your reaction having gone through that?
I don't know. It's tough. It's a lot of mixed feelings. It's like I remember being in that trial. I mean, when they said the jury has a verdict, my knees buckled underneath of me because I just didn't know which way it was going to go. It was a very tough moment because I just didn't know which way it was going to go. And then when they read the verdict, it was satisfying. But then you have to go back for sentencing. And I remember I'm standing almost as close to you guys as I was to him reading a victim impact statement. I had to read my sister's because she couldn't do it.
You were as close to the suspect.
And I think what hurt more was the fact that he hadn't taken responsibility. But then hearing from his mom, and I recognize that they've lost their family member. They didn't do this.
How old was he?
21. He was younger than my brother, actually. And As she said, all the things that he went through growing up, trauma, and she said, you know, that she won't have her son, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, I understand that, and I empathize with the fact that he had a lot of problems growing up. It doesn't give him the right to hurt anyone else and take somebody. But you're going to continue to be able to write to him and update him on what's happening outside, and we can't do that. My brother's sons won't be able to go visit him and see him. They'll see dirt in the ground, but they won't be able to physically touch and interact with him. So I don't know. I don't know what it's like to not know who did it. I mean, I know what it's like with my cousin's situation, and that it's anger. And I mean, I want to be real. It's anger. It's anger. And you kind of just want to know why. You want to know why. You want to, like, part of me almost wants to interview him. I want to know why. Like,
what were you thinking?
Do you regret this moment? Like, look at your life. Look at what you've caused. Do you regret this moment? You know, and he apologized to me, which I actually took a little bit of offense to, because like, dude, you don't know me. You know me from TV, and you've seen the sensationalism of this particular case because of who I am. But apologize to my father, apologize to his sister, apologize to his kids and his son's mom, who we have to go through this by ourselves now.
Nestor, it seems like a good place to
take a break.
When we come back, we'll take a deep dive.
We're running for mayor. We knew it was going to be heavy.
What a Smith administration would look like. I want to thank all of our sponsors. Nestor's showing you. Go out to TJ. TJ for Baltimore, right?
Yes. Yeah, we're down here at Fadley's. We're in Lexington Market.
TJ Smith for Baltimore.com.
Yeah. We're going to get you. Make sure you don't have any tourist crab cakes. You're real Baltimore guys.
Thank our friends at State Fair.
What do we got coming up next? Martin O'Malley's joining us.
We've got
we're
Attorney
be at State
General
Fair.
Brian Frosch.
TJ's got Hartford, fans here.
For those who say, hey, get some Republicans on, we got Harford County Executive Barry Glassman coming on.
I just friended him on LinkedIn.
We got a whole afternoon where we're going to interview the congressional candidates for the 7th Congressional District. So if you're listening to this and you represent one of the
Michael
Higginbotham's
coming on next
week. Y'all might need a month to interview all of those candidates.
I was going to say, it's going to be busy. So we're down here at Fadley's. Nestor, what are we doing?
All right, we're eating crab cakes. We're talking to T.J. Smith about running for mayor. The election coming up in April. We're into 2020. Hopefully by the time you run for mayor, we have a world championship parade for everybody.
There we go.
Right. Festivus for the rest of us.
There we go.
He's Don. I'm Nestor. We're back for more Baltimore Positive at Fadley's with T.J. Smith right after this.